My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Hey there, Jeff Lerner here, and today I'm doing something special for our episode of Unlock Your Potential. My team and I, we have curated a collection of some of the most powerful conversations that we've had on the show. It's going to be fantastic, and I cannot wait to send you off to enjoy them. You used to have like a pretty successful career in like banking or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So let's fast forward a little bit. Okay. And I never went to college. You know, I never went to college, not because I was choice, but really I wasn't a person that did good in school. I didn't really like school. I didn't like testing. I had anxiety, test anxiety, very high text anxiety. And something happened to me when I was making a decision to go to college, which I was going to go to FIT in New York City. And my grandmother got really sick, and she was like a second mother to me. She got both of her legs amputated, and my mom was a single mom. And I had a decision to go to college or work nights so we can keep a roof over our heads and my mother's head and take care of my grandmother, because we didn't have any medical finances to help us. She couldn't get it into a nursing home. And also, we didn't want to do that to her. So the doctor gave her about only 4 months to live after that happened. And we came together as a family, and we, helped her so much. And she ended up living 7 more years from 4 months. So within that, I went into banking because I felt like it was just the easiest thing I could do at the moment. So I applied, and I was good at sales, and I did that. So without a college degree, I started as what they call customer service rep. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I went to an assistant manager at like 23, 24, 25. Then from there, I went to a branch manager at like 27. And then from there, I went into private banking and became an assistant vice president of the bank. Less than, I think I was not even 30 yet. And then at 30, 31, I was VP and worked in a high ranking position where everybody had to have a college degree, but I worked my way up. And I thought I made it. I was like, this is what success is, you know? Mm-hmm. But something in me wasn't happy still. I had the money. I had the oh my goodness, she has a position without a college degree. Like, I had the pat on the back, like, you did it. But for me, it wasn't, I did it. And so that's when I stepped out into entrepreneurship, was to find my passion, which is exactly what I do now.
So I know we're not going to get an answer right now, but anybody listening feel what she just said? Anybody listening relate to, I had all the things that they told me I should want, and they told me I should be grateful for having them, and I was still, I mean, not only, I hear this all the time, so I already know people are cheering. Like, not only was it not fulfilling, but it seemed to be getting worse.
Like an emptiness started to get worse.
Mm-hmm. Because I've been there in different ways, never from like having a corporate job, but there've been times when like I'm getting everything I thought I wanted, and the realization that what I thought I wanted isn't giving me what I wanted to feel actually kind of makes you almost depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what was happening? Like, there was this like thundercloud moving in over your life, and you knew something had to change?
Yeah. I would not even want to get to work in the mornings. I would drink excessively on the weekends, to try to escape, because I wasn't happy. And then I thought to myself, like, who am I trying to convince? Like, why am I working this job and unhappy? Like, who am I trying to convince? Right. And I continue to ask myself that question. Like, why am I even doing this? Well, I would ask myself that, and I said, because I'm supposed to. Isn't this what I'm supposed to be doing? Like, this is, I made it. Like, how many? And then on top of that, you have guilt, right? Maybe some people that are listening have families, right? Well, I have kids. I have this. I have the enormous guilt goes into this as well. Mm. Well, if I quit, I'm selfish, right? Because not a lot of people get this opportunity, right? And so what happens is you get that need and that desire of what you were saying, Jeff, is that one time when there's so much emptiness inside of you, where there came a moment where I couldn't even get out of bed to go to work. And I knew in that moment, I had to come up with a plan to get me out of bed to see the future.
So you realize this is not the life for you. What's the transition? And just know my audience, they are like hanging on this moment, because probably the majority of my audience is people that don't want the job they have. and want the life we have of self-determination, financial abundance, total time freedom, location freedom, doing work that we're passionate about, feeling good about what we do. It's like everybody wants that, but people are terrified to make the shift. So how'd you get from there to here?
Yeah. So I'm not the person to say that this is going to be easy, right? Well, I'm the type of person, especially in my coaching practice, where I go into details about a lot of things. I'm not going to say, oh, this is how you do it. But I also give the steps in regards to why you should be doing this as well. So here's the thing with me is when I first started, I knew that I wanted to become an entrepreneur. I just had no idea what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So what I had to do was literally create a business plan, right? I stayed at my job and it depends. I'm a visual learner. I always tell people, when you want to find your entrepreneurship journey, figure out your learning style first. Right? I don't know if a lot of people talk about this, but this is so important. Reason why is because if you don't know your own learning style, how are you going to train yourself of what you project for your future and what you want to see, do, or whatever, you know, or be, right? So for example, I'm a visual learner. So what I had to do is I put a whole business plan together of what I wanted to do. In that moment, I didn't know I wanted to be a dating and relationship coach, which I'm going to get there. But all I knew is, what do I need to save? What type of business do I want to open? Who should I be looking at, right? In regards to who should I be modeling, right? Mm-hmm. We'll study the people in different industries, see what they're doing online, look at their courses that they're developing and see if there is a niche for you in it, right? And then I started thinking, okay, I started listening to entrepreneurial podcasts. I started listening to videos and I heard a lot about turn your pain into your purpose, turn your mess into your message, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that is so, sometimes it can sound so cliche because everybody says it, but it's so real, right? And so I really had to dive deep and I always wanted to do something in the love and relationship realm and also in fashion, but in love and relationship, I was scared because I was like, who am I supposed to give relationship advice? Who am I to give love advice, right? So we have that, those inner thoughts that go through. And then I started studying people in the relationship advice niche, right? And what are they doing? Who do you want to emulate, right? Who do you want to be? And then from there, I had a really, and this is for the audience too, is like, I want you to think of maybe that one devastating thing in your life that you've been through, right? Maybe you had bankruptcy once and now you're working towards success. Well, that feeling of being in bankruptcy someone that has not been in bankruptcy before probably wouldn't be able to connect to their clients the way that you have, right? Mm-hmm. Or how about someone that was divorced and really suffered for years after a divorce? You can help people overcome their divorce or other ways of what you believe. So there's always something for you, right? So I always say this to clients too, is and people that are looking for their passion, start with your business plan. Look at what is, even though you feel like you're not an expert in something, but you still have a message to share. So what is that? And niche down on that. What we try to do is, but I can do it all. I can help marriages. I can do this. I can do attraction for men. I can help women manifest love and goo gaga and all this. But who is your primary niche, right? And then focus on the online industry. Learn the internet. This is so important, right? SEO, podcasts, YouTube, start investing in the areas that you want to be one at a time. I strongly always suggest YouTube. I think YouTube is so big for entrepreneurs because people can get to know you and they'll automatically buy quicker. And so start to study those things and then come up with a 3-month, a 6-month, and a year plan for yourself and stay on that. Like when you serve in service, right? Like for example, you help entrepreneurs and also you dive a lot into personal development and becoming a better person overall. And I love that because I think more people need to do that. We have billions of people on earth. Not you or I can do that for everybody, right? So we need more people to help us and be like, I don't look at anybody as competition. I look at people as healthy competition because they're working with me, right? And so like when you serve in service to others, money starts chasing you. You never have to chase money. Like that's what changes. And that's what I want people to be ambitious, but also too, like we have to think about this too, as Prince Ye says this all the time. And I love it because you know, he says, there's no rewind button on life, right? There's absolutely no rewind button on life. We have to live and be present and live our dreams right now. For example, 6,000 years ago, the first language was created. 100 years ago, we had no airplanes. 50 years ago, we had no internet or cell phones. So everything that can be done has not even been done yet in our world. So there are ideas. There's still ideas that have to be made. There's still accomplishments that have to be made. Mm-hmm. And there's too many people waiting because it's hard to get out of that comfort zone, because what society tells us is you have to do what's right for your family. You have to do what's right for you. You, if you're making $50,000 a year, or even $100,000 a year, then you should be thankful. And it actually makes our money relationship not healthy.
Okay. So keep us going on the story. So you make a business plan without quitting your job, by the way. I love that. Thank you. A lot of people in my world, like, well, if I'm going to be an entrepreneur, don't I need to quit my job? No, I actually strongly suggest, you know, you don't burn a boat until you know that the island you're on can support life. Keep the story going though. How, where does it go from there?
Yeah. So I was ambitious. I mean, I was that person that was staying up till 2 a.m. studying stuff and going to work at 7 a.m. You know, like, yeah, you've got to put in the time if you want the return. Like, I'm not the person that, you know, and still to this day, like, I get work-life balance, but I also understand that if you want to leave a legacy also too, there's a different type of work ethic too that comes along with that. But I also do think having time for yourself is important. But in the beginning stages of building a business, you've got to be real with, I think it doesn't, you don't have that time. So it's about analyzing, where am I investing my time? What relationships are serving me that I need to actually, or not serving me, that I need to not invest my time in? What are those weekends that I shouldn't be going out and actually doing things a lot differently? Maybe the times at work that you would stay until 7 p.m. now you only stay till 5 o'clock because you got things to do after work. So from there, I started, like I said, studying YouTube. What is SEO? How do I rank on the first page of Google? And I would study all these things. And then also too, I would learn, okay, so I need to build, I don't have enough money to hire someone to build one funnel for me to create a lead magnet. So I also need to learn how to build a click funnel, right? A funnel that I know will be okay until I can make some money and grow my business and do things myself. And also the caveat to that is, the more that you learn as an entrepreneur and a business owner, when you hire people, it's very strong when the owner actually knows a little bit about what they do and how to do it. Right? Yeah. Doesn't mean that you have to be an expert in it, but there's things that you're going to have to do that you really don't like when you really just want to coach and do it. Right? I always hear, like, so many people saying, like, Apollonia, you know, this great friend, he's a great coach, but he's always like, but I need to hire this person. I need to do this. I'm like, no. I mean, how much money do you have coming in? Why don't you take some time to learn this yourself first, bring in some more income, and then you can start hiring people for the right places. And then also too, when you get to that point, I think it's really important to, when you niche down and you study, like, where do you want to grow? You know, I think, like I said, YouTube, look at YouTube experts that are doing it and sharing advice on how they grow their YouTube channel, get some constructive feedback, really niche down. And then from there, start thinking about, what are the people that you want to start working with, right? So we can't work with everybody. You know, we just can't all the time. Like, we can't. And so, for example, I niche down. I want to help men with attraction in life, dating, and relationships. That's it. Right. Mm-hmm. So once we niche down, then people understand your message more. And so your audience starts to grow because it's more streamlined, let's say on YouTube or even in Google. And also too, you get clear with the people that you want to help, and those people start coming to you. Right. So it's really about studying, investing your time in the right places and into better habits, and really just laser focus on your goals.
So what year was it when you decided, I need to do something different than this job?
2015.
Okay. And
2016, 15. Yep.
Okay. And what year was it that you actually quit the job because you were ready?
I think 8 months later. Almost
okay,
a year.
So but
8 months later.
8 months of prep. Mm-hmm. How long was it before that switch in entrepreneurship was paying you as much or more than you were making in the job?
Yeah. So the bonus that I have on here, and I want to be honest with people, is 8 months of prep doesn't happen to everybody. It can be a year or 2 years. The reason why it was 8 months of prep for me was because my boyfriend at the time, now husband, also had some knowledge about the online industry, right? Okay. So I also had that on my bucket when I met him, and it worked out perfectly for me, obviously. So I want to be, you know, transparent about that, because I don't want to sell somebody a dream that's not 8 months. It doesn't work like that all the time. And then from there, to be honest, you know, even though my husband now knew exactly what it took to be in the online industry, he also knew the importance of letting me figure it out and fall on my face. Mm-hmm. Right. So, and that's, I'm blessed to say that now, because now I can say this is, it took me like 2 years after, a year and a half, a good 2 years to build my business and start making money.
Yeah.
And the reason being is because my thing was, I couldn't niche down for the heck of me. I wanted to help everybody. I wanted to help women. I wanted to do this. And he kept telling me, you have to niche down. I want to do, why can't I just do it all? You know? And that was the biggest thing that set me back, I think, too. And then just focusing more streamlined on like educating myself, getting certifications, stuff like that. But other than that, I think it took me a good 2 years. But then once I studied, once I niched down, I got to, I'm at what, 500,000 subscribers, and I've only been on YouTube full, like actually doing it every day and being very, that's what I'm looking for, repetitive, was about maybe 3 years now, okay. Not even. And here's a thing that I've learned being in this space now, growing, knowing people, talking to people, studying online. When you get good online, you really know, just because someone has 2 million followers does not mean that they're making more money than you. And it doesn't mean that they're making money, right? You have to understand online business module, how it works, right? And so, you know, a lot of times people get mad because they're like, I don't want to sound sleazy online. I don't want to do this. I don't want to make clickbait titles because that's just mean and da 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 da. But it doesn't, if we focus on the, I have so many clickbait titles, it's not even funny. But when you listen to my video, my message inside is what counts, right? Mm-hmm. Because trust me, I've experienced YouTube and not, I don't want to make clickbait anymore. And honestly, I put together this amazing video that so many people need to hear, and it gets no traction. I only get like maybe 2,000 views out of a possible 50,000 of what I can get in the first 2 days, right?
Right.
And so people get mad at that, but then they don't understand behind it is this is what they asked for at the same time, because that's what makes them click, right?
Right.
So it's just understanding that. And also don't ever compare yourself, because some people, they know they can make money, but they also are okay where they are, or they're just, because they have this many followers does not mean that they can make more money, because there's people that I know that only have 20, 30,000 followers and are making close to $300,000 to $500,000 a month. You know, and it's their program. How willing are they, are the clientele to pay? What are they selling? How much free content do they give? And I think that's really, really important.
I worked in corporate America. I worked my way up very quickly from, you know, shift manager to assistant manager to manager in training to the youngest manager in the organization at that time, in their organization. I'm 19 years old, I'm already managing people. And then I become a district manager and then a regional manager. So I was the ultimate yes man. If they told me to go to Seattle, Texas, California, Thanksgiving, Christmas, I'm there. Why? Because that's how I was, you know, that's how I was raised. I'll work 70, 80 hours a week. I don't care. Right. Pay me overtime. I'm into that. Like, let's do it. Right. I actually got mad with them one time because they told me I couldn't work so much overtime. So I'm like, they were taking that away. They're like, you can't work 20 to 30 hours a week in overtime. And I got into an argument with my vice president at the time, because I'm like, what am I going to, I'm not, 50 hours a week for me at that time was like a part-time job, right? I'm thinking about it, right? I've been working all my life as a child. I'm like, I need at least 70 hours a week or I got to go. So thankfully, she agreed. She's like, you know what? Okay, we'll give you 20 hours a week in overtime. Let's do it. So, brother, I was working 10, 12-hour shift Monday through Saturday all day long, right? Like clockwork. Hmm. But anyway, I worked there 10, 12, I think it was like 12 years. And, you know, I was still dead broke. I was making 70K a year. And to me, that was a lot of money because, you know, where I come from, that was enough money, you know, especially in this economy at the time, right? There was enough money for me to start, you know, bought a house, right? Bought a house. And then I got a car, and my cars were pretty old. I could only afford like 10-year-old cars. I bought a car, and then, you know, me and my wife now, like we've been together since we were like teenagers. You know, it was enough. She was working, I was working, she's paying half of the bills, I'm paying half of the bills, right? That's all I could really afford. But I was still living paycheck to paycheck at 70K a year. You know, I'm not a good saver. I'm a good money maker, but I'm not a good saver. So I was living paycheck to paycheck. And I'm like, you know what? Like, this isn't what I imagine as an adult. I imagined me having my own business. I imagine being financial free. I imagine living the life of my dreams. I imagine retiring my mother. You know, I imagine my kids not having to struggle the way I did. So then, brother, in 2014, I made the decision of, you know what? I'm going to start building something for myself. And my mindset shifted. And I'll tell you what, I read a book called Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker.
Yeah.
You probably are like, I got it somewhere, right?
So it's around here somewhere.
Oh my God, bro. I read that book, brother. And it just,
game changer.
It just resonated with me. I could relate to it, right? The programming, the upbringing, you know, all that. Like, I was like, yes, this is me. This is it. And I just, you know, the way God's timing works, right, is such a beautiful thing. And let me tell you why. Here I am. I am about 12 years in. I'm the ultimate yes man. I am one of the head honchos in this company. And I'm at 70. I'm making these people 250K a month. All right, I'm producing 250K a month for them in gross revenue, and yet they're paying me 70K a year, right? And then, you know, I'm supposed to get this position that I worked towards for 4 years. I'm supposed to get this position. 4 years, I've worked my butt off for these people. And then it's time to get that next position. And I would have went from $70,000 a year to $110,000 a year, right? Which I would have been the first person in my family's history to make six figures a year, right? So I would have been the most successful person. I was kind of already the most successful at 70K a year, right? And then they screwed me. The guy that was supposed to give me, I earned that position because I did everything they asked me. I was the only guy training for that position for 4 years. So the guy that I was supposed to replace, he decides to give it to his cousin that was like, I was ranked number one. That guy was like a total, he wasn't serious, right? And he was like ranked 17th. The guy gives it to him. They screw me. I'm devastated. I'm now in a state of depression. And they asked me to, they're like, hey, take a break. 1 week pay, you know, it was like a grieving pay or something.
Right.
They're like, I'm so sorry, we screwed you. Take a week off, right? Go cry about it. And brother, I was, imagine like working 12 years and somebody says, sorry, right? Sorry, like, yeah, bro, like my whole, like they pulled the rug from under my feet. I went into a depression, but man, God started talking to me and he was telling me the reason why you didn't get this position is because this is not what I have in mind for you. This isn't what you're supposed to do. You've already done this long enough. You've already learned so much being in this position, right? Because I didn't go to college. So what did I learn? I learned hiring. I learned systems. I learned processes. I learned developing other employees and putting them in empowering positions and, you know, delegation and everything on a management scale, right? I didn't go to school, but guess what? 12 years worth of that, I learned a lot, right? Mm-hmm. I learned about KPIs and goals and metrics, everything. So I'm like, okay, I come back, but now my mind has shifted. I'm like, I'm never going to leave my life in the hands of someone else. And I speak to my vice president. I say, hey, listen, I just want to say this. I want to take a demotion. And they're like, what do you mean? I said, I could only work the hours of 7:30 in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon. I can't work 7:30 to 7:30 PM now. Right. And they're like, well, what's going on? I thought you liked overtime. I said, well, I'm going to start trying to work on leaving this job. They're like, what? How are you going to do that? Well, you know, I don't know yet. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to figure it out. I said, I'm going to figure it out. I can give you 1 year. I can give you 1 year. I'm committing to one more year. Like, okay, whatever. So I started working 7:30 to 3:30. And then as soon as I would get off, as soon as I would punch that clock, man, I was like, I've always wanted to be a real estate investor. Right. And it's like, well, you know, I always had the mind frame of, well, how can I be a real estate investor if I'm broke? Mm-hmm. I have no money. I have no experience. I have no credit. Right. I have no credit. And well, you know, I got a good enough credit score, but guess what? My debt to income ratio is through the roof. So no one's going to give me a loan anyway. Right. So what can I do? Then I learned about this thing called wholesaling, real estate wholesaling. Well, what is real estate wholesaling? Real estate wholesaling is literally just finding off-market discounted properties, negotiating with those prospects, those homeowners, putting them under contract, and then partnering up with somebody who can actually close on that deal. Now I'm the bird dog. I'm finding the deal, right? I'm out putting bandit signs. I'm out, you know, knocking on doors. I'm out, you know, putting out flyers. Like, brother, when I tell you that I became obsessed, and you have to be. If you're not obsessed with what you have committed to do, you're gonna fail. Like, you're not gonna make it. Any little roadblock that presents itself, you're gonna quit, right? You're not gonna make the sacrifices. You're not gonna be committed. You're gonna pick and choose when and where you wanna do this, etc. Now, when you're obsessed, nothing else matters. My habits, you know, going to the gym for 3 hours, out the window. Playing basketball for an hour or two a day, out the window. Hanging out with my family for 1 to 3 hours, out the window, right? Everything, all the side, you know, bad relationships, toxic friendships, out the window, right? I focus, man. It's like I just zoned in. I had laser focus and I started grinding, and it took me 6 months to find my first property. And then I found my first property after 6 months and 2,400 bandit signs. You know what bandit signs are?
I do.
Yeah. I'm out on Friday nights, 11 p.m. Boom, 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 boom. Next corner, boom, 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 boom. Right. Well, guess what? After 6 months and 2,400 bandit signs, I land my first deal. I partner up with the guy. I literally just made $5,000. I'm like, hey, man, I found this great property. Can you buy it? He made like 40K, 30, right. 30 or 40K. Right. And then I'm like, okay, I got a $5,000 check. I'm like, I've never seen this money in one check ever, right? So what I do? I invested that $5,000 into marketing. And then I send what's called direct mail, right? Direct mail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I land three more deals in the next 3 weeks. And I made $60,000. And now I'm like, what the hell? I just made $60,000. Man, it takes me a whole year to make 70. I just made 65K in the last 30 days, right? I still didn't quit my job, by the way, and I'll get into that, right? Because I was very scared. You know, I was very scared to quit my job, you know? So I put that 60K back into another mail campaign, and now I make 30K. So now I'm at $90,000 from two mail campaigns and $5,000 from putting out bandit signs. I'm at 95K in like 45, 60 days, right? This is 2015. And then I start saving. I got deals in the pipeline. I save up about 6 months worth of reserves. And I'm like, I'm out, right? I told these folks, as soon as my year hit, I remember it was like my birthday, 2015, March. And I'm like, hey guys, I'm out. I'm quitting. They're like, what? Yeah, I got money put away. I'm going to go build my own company, right? So sure enough, you know, I'm going to go build my own company. And I left that job. And brother, the first year, which was 2015, you know, we did very well. We did over $500,000. But 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, you know, 2020, obviously, we hit multiple seven figures, right? I'm actually looking at my expenses from 2019 right now. I'm not at my 2020. I'm looking at my expenses from 2019, or what I've spent on just real estate marketing alone. I spent $1,077,858.75 in just real estate marketing, not even like payroll, not even expenses like overhead. You know, like we bought this building in December of 2019 for a few mil. And we rehab this building, and it's a beautiful building now. I'll have to show it to you soon, right? But again, you know, we hit the ground running, brother. And you know what else we did when we started making all this money? We started to buy other companies, and we started to build other companies. And that's how we got to 27 companies. That's how we got to 27 companies. We're like, okay, well, you know, let's build a data company. Boom. Let's build a digital marketing company. Let's build a solar company. Let's build a medical company. Let's buy this other medical company, the competitor, right? And we just start dumping, you know, money. Like I bought this medical company last year in July for like $300K cash, right? And it gives me a really good return. It's a medical company for diabetics, you know, insulin, reservoirs, meters, strips, all that, right? So we dump money there, and it's been a phenomenal journey, man. And here I am now, you know, here I am running, you know, 27 companies. I got a great organization. I got great leaders, great people, great partners. And, you know, it's a blessing. It's been an absolute blessing. My life went from one side of the totem pole to the other side, right? Like, and yeah, don't get me wrong. The in-between was definitely a lot of trials and tribulations, but it's become my testimony, you know? So here I am.
Back me up, man. Like, when did you decide that you were going to be like a professional genius?
Professional genius. So growing up through school, I was always interested in learning how to code. I think it was in the seventh grade, when I would have been like 11 or 12 years old, that I first saw someone in the computer room. He was just, you know, on the Google homepage and right clicked view sourced, and all this like text came up. I was like, oh, that's really cool. And I kind of decided at that point that I wanted to learn how to code. And then because me and my friends, you know, we were the sort of the academic but not very cool kids of the school, we would kind of get together in the computer room at break times and lunch times. And we'd play these online text-based games. I kind of had the idea it would be cool to make my own online text-based game. And so that was what set me on the path to learning how to code HTML, CSS, PHP, that kind of stuff. And I eventually stumbled into the world of freelance, where I would advertise my services and try to undercut all of the other Indian outsourcing companies to work on small websites and things. So I sort of did that throughout high school, throughout middle school and high school. We call it secondary school in the UK. Eventually it got to the point where I kind of had this bug of making money online. And so every year I would try and set up this new business, some affiliate marketing scheme, something or another. And they all completely failed. But all of those opportunities or all of those failures taught me about how to build a website and how to build a landing page and how to write sales copy and all of that stuff. So that when I ended up getting into medical school in like 2012, at that point, I had an idea that, hey, why don't I run a company that teaches courses to other aspiring medical school applicants? And because I knew how to make a website and knew how to make a landing page and stuff, this company just ended up doing really well, because in 2012, it was a lot harder than it is today to make a pretty looking website. Mm-hmm. And so that was what started my sort of successful entrepreneurial journey, because so that business ended up making pretty decent money throughout medical school. And it was because I wanted to do some content marketing for that in 2017, 5 years later, I decided to set up a YouTube channel because no one was really doing video content around medical school admissions. And then the YouTube channel just sort of started to grow, because initially it started off with a very niche audience of medical school applicants. But then over time, it sort of expanded out a little bit, and I would have these sort of random videos here and there that just did really well and just, you know, went viral. And so my channel kind of morphed from a purely medical student thing into more of a student thing, and then more of a productivity thing, and then more of a tech thing. And now it's this weird mix of random stuff, which sometimes I struggle with, because people say that you should have like a very firm target audience in mind. And I feel like I kind of do a little bit of everything that I'm interested in. But it's also the sort of YouTuber that I want to be, the kind where I don't think too hard about what videos I'm going to make. I just kind of make whatever I feel like, and hopefully the audience is there for that. So that was just like a quick whistle-stop tour through the journey so far.
So you said you started your YouTube channel in 2017?
Yeah.
Did you have any sense that it could be a career?
At the time, no, absolutely not. I think I probably had in the back of my mind that, hey, you know, some YouTubers make it big, and it would be cool to be a big YouTuber. But I remember when I started out, I knew someone in real life who had 4,000 subscribers. And so I was like, oh my God, 4,000. And I kind of thought that, okay, 4,000 seems doable. Like, I was pretty sure I had better production value than this friend that I knew. And I was like, okay, 4,000 is manageable. And then at the same time, I knew of someone who had 20,000 subscribers. And that seemed like a completely impossible goal, completely out of reach, to the point that I wasn't even going to consider it a goal, because it would be like me thinking I'm going to win the gold medal in the 100 meters or something ridiculous like that. And then as it started to grow, I remember when I hit like 10K, like 15, 20K subs, still not quite believing that I'd ever hit 100K, and still just kind of thinking, okay, yeah, I bet it's going to plateau from here. And I always had in the back of my mind that, hey, this is really fun. I want to enjoy the journey. I don't want to focus on the destination, which is why I'm not a huge believer in setting goals, especially numerical ones. And then it just kind of kept growing. And I guess over the last 3 years, I've been able to build a team around it and expand the workflows. And we've now got it to a pretty good point where we're thinking about diversifying away from YouTube and trying to grow other sources of revenue, like courses and downloads and a membership site and all of the stuff that you're familiar with as a marketer. And over time, the channel has just kept on growing. And I just try very hard to not think about the numbers and to actually just keep my head down, enjoy the process, enjoy the journey, and think about, okay, what are we working on next? So
I'm curious, do you remember your kind of growth journey?
I think it took me about 8 months to get to about 5,000 subscribers.
Okay. That's
and
pretty
I was
quick.
I was making between 2 or 3 videos a week.
Okay.
And then at that point, I did a collaboration with this person I knew who had 20K. He was on 60K at the time. I was like, whoa, 60K, that's like totally impossible. And that collaboration sort of got a lot of new eyeballs to my channel. But I think what was good about that is that I had a backlog of videos that were pretty high quality, that were pretty reasonable. And so when I got suddenly more eyeballs on my channel, people stuck around. They didn't just kind of be like, okay, cool, he's got 3 videos. They saw I had 63 videos and watched them and subscribed and all that. And then immediately after that, just by coincidence, I had a few videos that just randomly went viral, and that really skyrocketed the growth of the channel. So I think in the first year, I think we got to about 50K. In year two, by the end of year two, it was in around 300K. And now we're kind of halfway through year three and it's on like 1 million. So things grow pretty fast, provide like once the flywheel starts to turn, but it's pretty slow, pretty early on. And like, you know, I went through about 60, 70 videos with a few thousand subscribers before things started to really take off.
You're making really good money from this channel. Like you're not one of these kids and you're not a kid, but you know what I mean? These kids that are like, I got to hurry up and get making money, 'cause I got all the student loans I got to pay off and I got to get into the economy. And like, you're making money at this point. So how does that impact your plan moving forward with medicine?
Yeah, it completely changes the game. So one question that I've been asking all of the doctors that I meet since I first got into medical school was that, hey, look, if you were to win the lottery, would you still be a doctor?
Yeah.
And in my kind of 8 years of asking that, half of the people that I've asked the question to say they would leave medicine completely. One guy even said, honestly, I would leave in the middle of an operation. And the other half of the people have said, I would still do medicine because it's fun to be a doctor, but I would definitely do it part-time. And that kind of suggests to me that sort of money is, you know, when push comes to shove, all of these doctors who I'm hanging out with, I'm seeing on placements, I'm seeing in the hospitals, they're not really enjoying their jobs that much if half of them would leave immediately and the other half would go part-time. And it's money that seems to be the crucial factor here. And so ever since I first read the 4-hour work week when I was 17 or 18 years old, I had in my mind that I don't want to be in this position where potentially I'm older and I'm working as a doctor, but it's not as fulfilling as I once thought it would be. And I've ended up being shackled to this job that I might not enjoy. And so I spent the last kind of 8 years of my life since discovering that book, chasing this thing of multiple sources of passive income and all of this stuff. And now I'm at the point where kind of the income from all my stuff, like the YouTube, the online classes and things like that, very, very comfortably covers my lifestyle. And that completely changes what I can do with my life, because I'm now taking a sabbatical from medicine. I'm spending that time wanting to travel the world, maybe do a placement in Australia in emergency medicine for a bit, focus on more videos, focus on more content, writing a book, all of this stuff, where a lot of my friends who also went to Cambridge to study medicine and they're all doctors are kind of having to work in medicine to make ends meet. And that's not to say they don't enjoy it, but I'm pretty sure if they had a six-figure sum in the bank, for example, they would be potentially making different decisions with their life. So it's one of those things where people say that money doesn't buy happiness, but it certainly buys freedom. And that's what I'm trying to take advantage of at the moment. Like, while I'm young, while I'm relatively unencumbered, while I'm, you know, I don't have a wife and kids, it is a pretty good time to do interesting things like traveling around the world and stuff.
Well, I'm 41 and I'm married and I have 4 kids. And I will say money still buys freedom. Passive income generated from the internet still buys a lot of freedom and still buys a lot of fun, cool stuff that you can do. You just take your family. What's the response that you're getting from other people who could very easily be doing what you're doing, but you know they're not, most likely? Like, how do they react?
Up until recently, I don't think many people that I knew realized how kind of successful the online money online thing could be. And then occasionally people would ask me at work, this was let's say a year or two ago, people would ask me very occasionally if I'd be on a night shift and someone would feel comfortable enough to ask me like, so, you know, this YouTube thing, do you actually make money through it? I'd be like, oh yeah, it makes about as much as my doctor's salary, which at the time was about $3,000 a month. And their sort of eyes would just pop out. They're like, whoa, like, you know, off of making this like 1 or 2 videos a week, you're making $3,000 a month. That's absolutely insane. But then a few months ago, I think about 6 months ago, I made a video called How Much Money I Earn as a Doctor and YouTuber. And in that, I broke down like 6 different sources of passive income that I had. And at the time, my total that I mentioned was about $20,000 a month. And when people saw that video, like that video went viral, and I had a lot of friends who work as doctors in the UK who were messaging me to say that random people at work were talking about that video in their hospitals all around the country. And I think off the back of that, a lot of people that I know / you know, medical students and doctors are now trying to get into this YouTube thing. So I think, I'm not sure I'd go so far as to say that everyone should start a YouTube channel. Certainly, I think everyone should put themselves out there online in some capacity, whether it's through Twitter or through having a blog. But for the right sort of people, the people who can see a bit, because I think it does take a level of faith and a level of consistency to actually succeed at this game. And the thing I always say to people is that, look, if you want to make money online, there's basically three broad ways of doing this, as you know. Number one, you can sell services. Number two, you can sell products. And number three, you can sell attention. And I got started by selling services as a web designer and then products, you know, these courses for medical applicants. But now the thing that I sell is attention. And when you have attention, when you have an audience of people that know, like, and trust you, it just superpowers all of the services and all of the products that you want to sell to that audience. It's absolutely magical. But to build that audience, you have to follow a 3-step process. And this is what I always say, that the 3 steps are: number one, create valuable content. Number two, put it on the internet for free once a week. And number three, do that for 2 years. And it's that third bit that everyone, like most people I know, fall down on, because no one, like very few people, have the faith and the consistency to plug away at it once a week for 2 years. But I think if you can hit that cadence and get to that point, then as you said, the flywheel starts to turn, you start to get exponential growth, and then the whole game gets changed completely. And certainly there are people I know who started YouTube channels after seeing mine about a year ago, 2 years ago, who are now on several hundred thousand subscribers and making so much more money off the YouTube channel than they would ever make from their job as doctors, even if they were like super senior in the UK. So it definitely has the power to change lives. It's just that I don't think it's just that people don't stick with it for long enough.
So I looked up Derek Sivers while you were talking. His TED talk is called Keep Your Goals to Yourself. So I'm curious for you, if you subscribe to that, or, you know, because building a YouTube channel is by definition kind of the inverse of that, because as soon as you start putting videos out onto the web, you're pretty much telling the world, hey, I'm here and I'm going to build something. So I'm curious your take on that. Like, do you have big goals that you're plotting, that you're keeping close to the vest, or have you just basically decided, you know what, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and people are going to have their opinions? And if so, how do you manage not letting the doubters get into your head? Because I'm sure you've had them, and I'll bet even though a lot of people might think that, oh, well, you're out of the woods now, I'll bet you still have them.
Yeah. Oh, man, I love talking about goals. It's like one of my favorite topics, because I'm never really sure how to think about goals. And for example, the Derek Sivers approach to them, I think I I haven't seen his TED talk, but he has a lot of things about goals. I think partly keep your goals to yourself means don't tell people about your goals because of all the negativity it might inspire. I think partly it also means that when you start telling people about your goals, in a way, you immediately get that feel-good sensation. You get the endorphin release. Yeah. And in a way, it actually makes you less likely to achieve that goal because of the fact that you've already told someone. And, you know, the people who say, oh my God, I'm going to lose 10 pounds by next week, aren't the people who are actually doing the work and losing the 10 pounds. But also, I think like what his philosophy is mostly about is about that about the idea that goals are kind of pointless. And what he says is that, and there's a line from his book, which is like my top favorite quote of all time. And he talks about how when he was building his company, he didn't do anything by the book. He didn't bother having like a privacy policy in terms of service and contracts and all that boring stuff. And he would often get phone calls from investors and people being like, hey, we want to invest in your company. But he would be like, no, man, you know, this is small. I'm keeping it small. I'm doing a good service. I'm enjoying running the company. I'm helping my fellow musical artists sell their music. Why do I want investment? Why do I want to grow? And there's a line from the book where he says, never forget why you're really doing what you're doing. Are you having fun? Are you profitable? Are you helping people? Isn't that enough? And I often think about that like, yeah, that really is enough. And for me, and for anyone, like growing a business or growing a YouTube channel, I think it's so easy to become fixated on the numbers and think, oh God, I've got to hit 2 million subscribers by 2021 and all that kind of stuff. But I always go back to that quote and think, no, you know, this is fun. It's helping people. It's definitely profitable. And that is more than enough. And so I try not to have goals when it comes to the channel or the businesses. I just aim to enjoy the journey. And I kind of trust that if I'm providing value and enjoying myself along the way, then the numbers will just trend in the right direction. And that's all I care about. The reason I like talking about goals is that it seems like everyone has a different opinion on this. So I always ask this question because on my YouTube channel, I interview other podcasters and YouTubers and stuff. And I always ask, you know, how do you feel about goals? Because I know some people, especially like the more business-minded people, like, you know, my friend Noah Kagan, who's sort of, you know, eight-figure CEO and all that kind of stuff, he cares a lot about goals and KPIs, and all of the business books that I'm reading at the moment about management and leadership all seem to say that actually goals and KPIs are really helpful to have. And yet then there's also this undercurrent where I'm thinking, yeah, but having a goal, it kind of encourages a, like if you have a goal, then I feel like in a way, you're choosing to be dissatisfied until you hit the goal. And then once you hit the goal, you're just moving the goalpost anyway. So I haven't quite been able to figure out where's this balance between growing because it's kind of cool and fun and nice and it's good for you and good for your customers versus, you know, oh, it's fine. I'm happy doing what I'm doing and enjoying the process. I think there's a tension there that's not easy to resolve with like a simple tweet. One thing that I struggle with on the marketing front is kind of selling myself.
Oh.
And it's...
Let me help you, my friend.
Yeah. I guess I always kind of like, especially when it comes to charging money for stuff, like I just feel so bad about it. And I know I shouldn't. And I'm trying to kind of actively brainwash myself away from feeling bad about charging for things. Because I guess in my mind, there's always the thing of what if I just got lucky? What if this sort of elaborate system that I've built around effortlessly churning out YouTube content, which I've dubbed the infinite content engine that I want to turn into a course, what if that's actually just kind of snake oil and I'm just trying to sell snake oil to people? And I really worry about that. But I've been having calls with other email marketers and stuff who are helping me out on this, be like, no, you need to stop viewing selling as being a bad thing and start viewing it as being a service to your audience. But yeah.
Well, hey, I'm going to say this. Here's the thing. I'm not your coach. Far be it for me to give you advice, but I will express
my opinion. Please give me advice.
I'll express this opinion to the audience at large. And if it serves you too, then great. Giving knowledge, wisdom, insight, perspective, experience, whatever, away for free entirely is disserving your audience. Now, you give away a lot for free. My YouTube channel, I've been doing it for 2 years. I have almost 400 videos on there. I give a lot away for free. I'm very passionate about putting myself out there first. Listen, I will show you the audience, you the interested party. I will show you again and again and again, ad nauseum, ad infinitum, beyond the point of reasonable dispute that this is real, that I know how to do it, that there's science to it, that there's a process, you know, and that you can do it too. I will prove that to you beyond a reasonable doubt. But at some point, if you want me to really, really help you, you're going to have to pay for it. Is it because I need the money? Actually, no. Thankfully, these awards and what's behind them has made it so that I literally don't need your money. I'm fine. But if you don't pay me, you won't do it.
Hmm.
You won't do it. You'll listen to my podcast. You'll be 400 episodes into my podcast 3 years from now when I have that many episodes. You'll have watched every video on my YouTube channel. You'll be on 94 other marketers' lists. You'll have 700,000 emails in your inbox that you can't even wade through, all with free information that you're not implementing. Because when you pay attention. When you invest your money, you follow through by investing your energy, your time, your focus. Bottom line is, when you put skin in the game, now you start feeling like you're going to look like an idiot if you fail. Because people are going to go, you blew that money. And even if you don't tell anyone, you're going to know. And all your conditioning around wasting money is going to convict you for not doing the damn work. And if I don't charge you at some point, I allow you to bypass all that conditioning, all that reinforcement that's actually going to compel you to get the result that you say you want.
Hey there, real quick, I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts, this could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
You're a hairstylist trying to make a change. So where do you think you came up with that discipline?
Yeah. So let me frame that even more. So hairstylist, primary earner in my family. My husband was unemployed at the time and I had a 3-year-old and a 2-year-old. Okay. So let's just frame that.
So everything you're doing part-time while you're still working, cutting hair or styling.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. But I was so in love with the long game. I was like, however long it takes. And I kind of viewed my hairstyling career as my primary investor into my dreams. I'm like, that's fine. Yes. I'm here. This is predictable income. It's not a problem. And again, I wasn't looking for the fastest exit possible. I was just looking for what was sustainable, what felt purposeful, and what I love doing. And one of my, I guess you can call it my litmus test that I did for myself. I was like, okay, if I'm not willing to do this for free, I probably have no business doing it. So I'm going to see if I still love it while I'm not making any money, then I know this is for me. And so, yeah, I was like when I had clients processing color, there I was offering value online, talking about personal development. And it was even a joke with some of my clients. They're like, hey, when you have a book someday, I'm going to come and sign up. Like, you better believe it. I'm going to have a book someday. And so my clients knew, I knew. So I was literally putting in the time, even while feeling financial pressure in my life, I had to keep focusing on like, okay, it's only painful now. I know what I'm working on. And so I had insane mental discipline, but also because I was just in a posture of like, let's experiment, let's have fun. And I'm not interested in burning myself out getting there because I had done that before when I was going through affiliate and social selling while also being a mom, burnt myself out so bad. And so I was like, we have to reframe this in a way that works. And so, did it. And then it went crazy.
Yeah.
After a year. So it was like 15 months of like just serving people. Literally, here's what I did. This is crazy. I saw someone struggling online and she had built a course and she couldn't sell it. And I maybe had a couple of exchanges with her on Instagram and I sent her a message. I said, hey, I'd really like to see you increase your sales. Can I help you? I'll talk with you. I'll meet with you once a week. We're going to improve your marketing. I know if we just cleaned up these things, you'd start making money for free. She's like, are you crazy? Sure. Sure enough, she started making money and I kept doing it with a few more people. I'm like, can I help you? And I was testing it. And sure enough, those became my first paying clients when I put together an offer.
So is that what you did? You took on a free client to produce a case study.
Several. I did them in multiple business demographics. I did a photographer. I did an interior designer. I did a hairstylist. I across the board and direct sellers and social sellers. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take all these people and all these demographics and do the principles still apply? Does the framework still apply? And let's revisit again. I was a hairstylist for 15 years. All I had was a deep understanding of like buyer psychology, consumer psychology, and listen. Actually, the value was I had spent 15 years listening to people. So I understood people really, really well. I'm like, I may not understand everything about marketing, but I know people. And I was self-taught. Literally at night, I read marketing books. I was like, I wasn't in masterminds. I couldn't afford to be in masterminds. I was literally so broke. I said no to guacamole at Chipotle. I was like, nope, can't do that either. But I was like, I know I created a six-figure business in hairstyling. I started an online clothing boutique and we broke even. Okay, there's skills here. And so, yeah, self-taught, but I'm like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this in all these different frameworks. And then eventually I had proof of concept. Then I had experience. I'm like, I know it works. I have proof of concept. I have people that will buy it. I had been spending a year developing some credibility and offering nothing but value online to a specific demographic of people. And I remember the first thing I did was I was like, I'm just going to host this crazy 3-day live event. I'm going to give all my goods away. I'm going to tell everything I know to people and I'm going to help them as best I can. And then I'm going to sell on the back end of that a coaching offer with me. So if people are like, well, I don't have money for advertising. Listen, I did this all without paying a dime for advertising. Yeah. I don't think I paid for Facebook ads or advertising at all until I made 300K organically with a very small audience. So yeah, so I kept going and I hosted that masterclass and then I blew my own mind and I had $25,000 in signed offers after 18 months of literally nothing. Then 3 days, do an offer, 25K cash came in and my brain melted. And I want to say, if you want to have a lot of success in entrepreneurship, you have to increase your capacity and your threshold for pain and discomfort. And if you are only about getting out of your present pain as quickly as possible, you won't know how to play the long game. You won't know how to weather storms. You won't know how to position your company for the future. And I think I can thank my hairstyling career for that because I had graduated from the most prestigious hairstyling school. It was Vidal Sassoon. And I thought I was hot stuff when I graduated. I'm like, it's going to be great. I'm going straight to, because I had an A-list clientele. I was in Hollywood at the time. But when I graduated, I thought, that's it. I'm going to get my chair. I'm ready for the A-list celebrity to sit in my chair. And I went to the salon and they're like, yeah, you know what you're doing? You're starting at minimum wage and you're going to be an apprentice. You're going to shampoo hair and you're going to sweep and you're going to be under these master colors because you know nothing. And it was humbling, but it was some of the best training I ever got. And I had to play the same game with entrepreneurship. It was just like, you know what? I'm going to sweep. I don't know how long I have to sweep for. I don't know how long I have to earn minimum wage and not see massive rewards, but I know that I'm willing to be an apprentice so that I can eventually be the master. But everyone wants to come into entrepreneurship and immediately be the master. They want the millions, they want the master, but they're unwilling to do the painful grunt work that often requires a long-term mentality, which is why I have very little tolerance for people that just want it fast, where they're just like, I just want to skip that. I'm like, this ain't for you then.
So there was an experiment in the 1950s by a psychologist. I don't know, behavioral psychologist, animal psychologist. I don't know exactly what he was, but he was at Johns Hopkins and his name was Kurt Richter. And he did these experiments in the 1950s where he would drown rats. And so he would throw a rat in a beaker of water that had straight sides, like the rat couldn't get out. And he would time how long would the rat swim before it would just give up and let itself drown. And the rat would drown typically after about 2 minutes. A rat would be like, this is pointless. Nobody's coming. I give up. And he would drown. And then he started reaching in and saving the rats like 5 seconds before they were about to give up. And he would pull them out and he would be like, okay, you're saved, Mr. Rat. Good for you. Ha ha. Just kidding. And he would throw them back in. But now the rat has a belief. If I tread water, I might get saved.
Hmm.
And how long would they tread water now? Take a guess. Before it was 2 minutes. But now that they have some hope, how long could they tread water?
2 minutes and 20 seconds. 30 seconds longer. That's my guess.
Days.
What?
Days.
What?
1,000 times longer. There's 1,440 minutes in a day, I think. So like literally their endurance went up 1,000 times mm-hmm. with just a little bit of hope. Talk about delayed gratification, right? So my thesis is, humans, if we believe that it will pay off to stay in it, I think we have 1,000 times more resources, more a deeper reservoir than most of us tap into. I just think we live in a world that, and I think some of it is culture. I think some of it is a narrative. I think some of it is reinforcement. I think some of it is a crappy educational system. I think some of it is a lot of inherited trauma in families, and there's a lot of reasons for it. But I think fundamentally people just kind of like, there's no point in being gritty because it's not going to pay off anyways. So why try? And so my question is, why aren't you like that? Why were you the rare one that was like, I don't care how long it takes. I'm going to do it until.
If you were to ask me a couple years ago, I really believed in the inevitability of my goals. I was like, there's just no way. The only way it won't happen is if I stop. The only way it won't happen is if I give up. And so I was so sold on the inevitability of my goal that I surrendered the timeline. And I think when we surrender the timeline, mm-hmm. we have all the power, because then we're serving from the ultimate posture of service. It is like Zig Ziglar. We just want everybody else to win because it's no longer about me winning on my timeline, because I think that's going to take care of itself. And I knew for me at the time, like $1 million was like money I couldn't even conceive, think of. I was like, I know eventually one day I'm going to make $1 million. Never in my wildest dreams, while I was out serving and giving value and surrendering the timeline, did I think I was going to have a $10 million company in 2 years? Never in my wildest dreams.
So where do you think that came from?
Man, I was super gritty. I had a lot of delayed gratification also in upgrading my lifestyle. So I tell my students this all the time, I'm like, y'all, go look at some of the old stuff that I filmed for you and look at the room I was in. There was holes in the baseboards. There was dog stains on the carpet. It was dark and I didn't have great equipment, didn't have great light, camera, and sound, none of it, because I was so busy investing my money into the future, into masterminds, into coaches, into networks. And like, I didn't go out and buy the car, the designer bag, or the house. Like I waited because I'm like, I know where I want to go and I'm more interested in. And I said this to someone the other day, I was like, as an entrepreneur, you value your experience of wealth more than you value the appearance of wealth.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to be bothered with the appearance of it. I was like, no, I know where I'm going. So there I was with literally hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash, brand new. And I was like, no, I'm not going to redo my baseboards. I'm not going to do this because I know where I'm going. And so it was delayed gratification, not just in like the career and how that was going to look, but even like with my money, with my investments, with assets, all of that.
Hard work over a long enough time horizon inevitably pays off. That is just a fact. Like, and by the way, if it doesn't, why are we even here? Like, I don't know, just stop breathing now. Like, it's like people, they're like caught in this existential tension of like, well, good things don't happen to people that delay gratification, so I'm not even going to try. Well, then like all we're doing then is just dying slowly.
I'm going to even offer something a little crazy, maybe to someone that's in our audience. It's like, no, literally, I don't have any stories. There's just no way, because I know that I have my own students I teach, and they're always going to be someone that's like, no, you don't understand.
This is the second question, basically. It's like, what do you do with people that just like don't accept these beliefs?
Yes. Yeah. So what I would ask you is, are you willing to create slow evidence that it might possibly be true? And that was for me. I had zero evidence that I could become one of the best marketing coaches. Zero evidence. But I'm like, am I willing to create and have slow evidence? Am I willing to do this one thing? For example, that one person I coached for free, that was building slow evidence. I was like, okay, I helped her. And it's very easy when we have one win for our brain to dismiss it and say, it was a fluke. It was a matter of luck, timing, circumstance. But if you actually own the result, the moment you own it, you think this can be duplicatable and therefore I can replicate it. And so I decided I'm going to create this piece of evidence and therefore I'm going to try this again. And the more I do. And I'm going to say messy imperfection is really the way to go. I was willing to do it imperfectly, messy, half put together. And I was like, the best way to get data is failing and implementing and refining. This is the only way I'm going to move forward. And that was what created the slow evidence. So this is what I teach my students. I'm like, listen, B minus work, C's get degrees. This is how you do it. You have to be messy. Perfectionism, you cannot play that game in entrepreneurship. In fact, you gotta start, you know, increasing your tolerance for failure and disappointment. Otherwise, maybe this isn't for you.
Kristen Boss, who has achieved massive success in the last 4 years from very humble beginnings. You now have one of the best known podcasts in your category. I'm very envious of you on that, by the way. I'm working very hard to catch you. You have a, you know, 8-figure company. You have far more success than maybe you ever really saw yourself with a few years ago. How are you grappling with the fears coming back? Because I'll tell you, I mean, from the level you're at to go to the next level, like shit's getting pretty crazy at that next level. So how are you dealing with the fears right now?
Therapy. But well, it's true. I mean, like I tell everybody, I'm like, therapy.
Therapy.
It's just, what I've been saying is just radical self-compassion, working on understanding my nervous system, working with my nervous system. Yeah. And I tell people, like, I really believe growing your income and growing your success is built on your ability to grow the capacity of what you can put on your nervous system. So learning to be with yourself when you are feeling massively afraid, when you're feeling really triggered, when you feel intense anxiety, learning to self-regulate, self-soothe, have support. Because if you can't trust you with you, then of course you're not going to trust you with you at the next level. So I think self-trust has been like a massive part of this journey, and constantly an exercise I do that is just very healthy for me is I regularly burn my business down in my brain in the best way, being like, okay, if it all went away, what would you do? If it all went away, how is it still worthwhile? If it all went away, how is your life still good? If it all went away, how are you still a significant person in the world? Mm-hmm. So just working on detaching my worth from my business psychologically, mentally, emotionally. And that's what my book is about too. You know, that really it has been helpful to me because honestly, people are like, I want to make $10 million overnight. I'm like, no, you don't. You want to test that on the nervous system?
Yeah.
It's like success whiplash for sure. There was no thought of being the CEO of a company. Like that has been That has been massive growth for me. And so, you know, the load on your nervous system, it is very real, and learning to like care for yourself, be aware of it, understanding your own fight and flight responses and how you bring that to business. And so really you have to learn to be the higher evolved creature in your business and being like, okay, if my primal brain runs the business, God help us, because all it's interested in is survival. That's all it's interested in. So it doesn't make the best decisions from survival. So it's about learning to access our prefrontal cortex a lot faster and being the higher reasoning human when our nervous system is triggered. And so I don't know about for you, but do you remember how your nervous system felt your first massive launch where you saw like money you'd never seen before? Do you remember how that felt?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So for me, it was in spring of 2009. I had just started my affiliate marketing business, and bear in mind, I'd been an entrepreneur for like 13 years at that. I dropped out of high school at 16 to become an entrepreneur. So it wasn't that I was new to risk. I was just new to risk actually paying off. And in a few months, I went from like, I made like $2,000. And then I made like the next month, I made like $8,000. And then the next month I made like 25. And then I went to 40. And then I went to 70. So it was but in June of 2009, I made like 70 grand from affiliate marketing in 1 month. That was more money than I had made in any year of my life prior to that point. And I was 30 years old. And my brain just completely fell apart. Yeah. It's like, I don't have the words for it. I'm still fumbling for the words. So.
Yeah. I remember for me when I had my first massive launch, it was a $250,000 launch, and it was a launch born from like, I just want to help people. We'll see what happens. We already have a yearly goal. Why not? Let's just do it. 250K launch. And mind you, as a hairstylist, like 100K working on my feet 12 hours a day, literally having to work hard, trading time for money. So when I saw 275K come into my bank account in 48 hours, I had a panic attack in the middle of the night. Like I couldn't get my breathing under control. I was freaking out. I was thinking about, like, you know, the 275 new students that are now under my care. Like that was my first, oh, crap. Yeah,
and okay. To be clear, that money like that doesn't come with no strings attached. It comes with customers.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Right? Exactly. So now it was like, now I have 275 people I got to take care of. What if all, and I remember my brain just spiraling, like, what if all 275 ask for a refund tomorrow? What if it all goes? But again, that was my first, I remember that being my first massive nervous system overload with success and money. And I had to regulate that, because if you can't regulate that, guess what's going to happen? Your primal brain's going to override it, and you're going to self-sabotage, and you're going to be telling yourself, we can't have all that success and all that money, because remember last time we had a meltdown. Like, yeah, this is why people stall out.
Yeah. And by the way, this never stops being true. You know, I will just say, like, for where I'm at right now, I've given myself some very specific, very audacious goals for the next 3 to 5 years. And I know that the biggest battle that I have to fight is to keep myself from sabotaging the becoming process of becoming the person that can pull off what it is that I know I'm intrinsically capable of, but I have to deal with myself along the way.
Amen. You said that so well. I'm going to steal that. Be like, yeah, the only problem I foresee having, because same thing for me, next 5 years, like, scares me a little bit. I'm like, the only thing that's going to get in the way of that happening is me getting in the way of my own becoming, for sure.
I want to pull you back to before you were Brian Page, the king of Airbnb. I just want to meet Brian. I want to meet Brian and his pain and his struggle, who needed something to work, and this happened to be it. But tell me about that guy and kind of how you got from there to here.
You know, I've been a real estate guy my whole life. Right out of college, I was looking for a way to create cash flow. I had read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki. I was a big fan. I loved the idea of getting out of the rat race. And like a lot of people, I was looking for that elusive, you know, passive income, you know, and I was looking for a way to be able to go do the things I wanted to do and not have to work a job that I hated. And I didn't like any of the jobs I'd ever had my whole life. I'd been fired from many jobs. I couldn't hold down a job. I told my dad I was never going to work a job. I didn't know what my career was going to be, but I did want to make money. And I wanted to make money so I could go enjoy my life and that kind of thing. And so I was looking at real estate right out of college. That was like the number one like vehicle for, at least I saw, creating wealth. And so I jumped into real estate and started flipping homes. And that was early 2000s. I started flipping homes. This was before there was any TV show. There was no Flip This House, none of that stuff. It was all still fairly unknown. And people used to tell me, well, you can't flip houses, that's illegal. And I was like, what's illegal about buying and selling property? I don't get it. So everybody thought it was illegal and it was crazy, but I did really well flipping houses and I had a great mentor. And after just 2 or 3 years of that, I ended up becoming a millionaire in my 20s. And thought I was a big shot, thought I had figured out life and everything was going to be roses from there on out, and not knowing that the real estate crash was right around the corner. So that was about 08 when the real estate crash happened. And that was where my life changed dramatically, because I went from being just a broke guy that had some success to being worse than broke. And I was in debt to the IRS to the tune of 7 figures.
Okay.
and bankrupt. Wow. And yeah, I was basically, I didn't declare bankruptcy, but I was basically bankrupt and lost all my properties. And you know, a lot of people went through this big crash, but for me, it was the worst time of my life. And that, out of that birthed this idea. I had to come up with a new idea because I still believed in cash flow. I still, to this day, think everybody should be trying to earn cash flow rather than income, earned income. And I just wanted to find what's the next thing I can do to create, you know, consistent cash flow in my life. And I found that Airbnb was that. And that kind of set me on this journey to where I'm at now.
But yeah, I can totally relate. You know, when I started online after that, my name is Jeff Lerner. I actually added an A to the spelling of my last name, made it L-E-A-R-N-E-R.
Wow. Okay.
Because I just thought anonymity is good for me right now.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know if it made any difference.
I know the feeling.
But isn't that horrible to be in a place in your life where either you're scared to succeed, you're scared to be seen succeeding, you're scared to even try?
Well, the funny thing was that when I started in real estate, I had a mentor and I started buying properties like crazy. The very first month in real estate, I started buying all these properties and flipping them and everything. And it was because I went to my mentor and I said, this is kind of risky. I'm signing my name to all these mortgages and what happens if it doesn't work out? And I remember he told me, he said, well, what's the worst that could happen? Like really, what's the worst that could ever happen? I said, well, I guess I could lose my properties. I could ruin my credit and then I could be broke. And he's like, kind of like you are right now, broke. And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, is that worth risking that to go get what you want? And I said, I guess. And so it changed my mindset. Little did I know that the worst would happen for me. But then I had to start over again and ask myself that question again. What's the worst that could happen now starting over? And I think everybody should ask themselves that question. What is the worst that could happen? I mean, if you're risking your life to do something, you might want to consider not doing that thing. But in business, there's very few times where we actually risk our lives. There's no such thing as a debtor's prison, thankfully. So, yes. You know, you can do big, bold things knowing that you may fail miserably, but that's kind of the journey of many. All the entrepreneurs I admire have gone that same journey. So I was willing to do, I remember after getting back in and starting again in the new business, I told myself, if I got to go bankrupt 5 times or 10 times, I don't care how many times it takes, I'm going to do it until I'm successful. And that was kind of my mentality and still is.
So why is it, you mentioned earlier on what's obviously been part of the key to your success, which is that you hated the idea of and the reality of having a job.
I hated the idea of a job.
Right?
Yeah, it's because a job to me represented someone else dictating where I spent my time, how much time I had to spend, and how much I could make. And my time wasn't my own. And now some people love their job. Great. I'd say the majority of people don't love their job. And you know you don't love your job if you were to win the lottery tomorrow and get $50 million with a jackpot or whatever, would you still go into work?
Right.
If your answer is no, then you probably are not going to that job for the purpose of getting income, which is okay. That's what most of us do. But I realized that from a very young age, even when I was a kid, that I just did not like the idea of not controlling my own destiny in every way. And so that's why I just never liked the idea of a job. And even in college, I saw college as a chance to goof off. I didn't see it as like, I'm going to go get a great job. Cause I certainly didn't treat it that way. It was always the idea that I was going to be an entrepreneur.
I wish we could figure out what is the difference. Where is the split in somebody's lifeline that says it was this moment when I decided not to become a product of the cycle, but I decided to break the cycle.
Well, I mean, I think you just nailed it on the head. Decision is a very powerful word. To decide is, you know, by its very definition, decide is to cut off
right. All
other options and make a choice. And very few people want to make choices nowadays. We want everybody else to make our choices for us and some other group to make the choice for us, whatever. So deciding is very important, but also believing, having some kind of belief that makes you step into that belief. So in other words, the belief that I had early on is that I could become a millionaire at a young age. And I just believed it for some strange reason.
Where did you get that? Where did you get it? Because a lot of people in your situation never get that belief.
Well, I mean, for me, actually, it was with, I was involved with network marketing and multi-level marketing for years. And I never made any money doing it. I was horrible at it. But the one thing they do when they get you at those meetings is they indoctrinate you and teach you these beliefs. Like, you know, you don't need a job. And, you know, a lot of them are great, great teachings, you know, and that you could become financially independent and you know, your destiny is your own and there's no limits and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I believed it all. I just thought, well, if it's true there, it's probably true in some other areas. And I realized that you could do it in a lot of different fields like real estate or online marketing. There's a lot of different ways to do it. And so I just took that belief with me. Well, as I got older, I learned new beliefs that people have. So I ran into a new mentor. This was not that many years ago. And he said, you know what, Brian, making millions of dollars is easy. I was like, well, that's crazy. That's offensive. Don't say that.
Right.
That's offensive. And he's like, well, no. I mean, for me, it's true. For you, it might not be true, but for me, it's making millions of dollars is easy. What if you had that belief, Brian? And I was like, well, that's just stupid. Like, you know, like offhand, you know, I can't even entertain the idea that that might be true. And so I started saying to myself for years, I have a story that I read to myself every morning. It's kind of the story of what's not yet true. It's like the story I want to be true. And it's a very powerful exercise to do. But it's just one of the things in my story, as I started saying, this was years ago, making millions of dollars is easy. And it's amazing all the opportunities that start popping up suddenly when you start believing that. And not only that, what actually transpires in your bank account when you believe that. And you know, there's more involved than just belief. I'm not saying that it's just like the secret. You sit around and you know, you right, envision millions and they drop in your lap. There's actually work involved. But for me, the belief is what holds a lot of people back. And so they don't decide that they're going to have a different life, and they also don't believe they really can. So they never take action. And I think that knowing what to do is not nearly as important as believing in what you could do.
Rich people care a lot about money. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get a lot of something that isn't important to you. And he tries to sort of remove the shame from being like, yeah, I want a lot of money.
Well, it takes a lot of balls to admit to yourself that you really, even if you don't believe it, that you want to believe something that outlandish, you know, because who am I to think that that's actually could be easy? Now, you know, easy is all relative, but I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it could be a lot easier than you think. I'm not saying easy means you push a button and not, you don't, and then it just happens. I'm saying easy relative to what you think might be possible. Now, if you're aiming for, you know, hundreds of dollars is easy to make, and that's your belief, well, then you're probably not going to stumble into millions. Right. The same way that, you know, I've been thinking lately, what's a $1 billion idea? You know, that's a different kind of question to ask. What's a $1 billion idea? How does somebody make $1 billion? If that's that's a whole nother level of thinking, right, of abundance. But the questions that you ask will determine kind of the opportunities that you see. And so I started doing that a long time ago, and it was amazing how that kind of unfolds. So I sometimes see people and they're like, hey, Brian, I'm making $15 an hour right now, and I'm trying to figure out how to get to $20 an hour. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, great, I can show you how to do that. But have you ever thought bigger for yourself? You know, why limit it to that? Why work for anything per hour? Why not have money coming in that you're not working for every hour? You know, just trying to always question yourself and think about what's the more empowering belief, not just with money, but what's the more empowering story that might not yet be true for you that you could start believing. And I hate to use the word brainwashing, but I do. I think brainwashing can be a positive thing if you're brainwashing yourself and you're aware of it. So I'm aware that I'm always brainwashing myself because I'm always believing things that aren't true until they are, if that makes sense. Because you're going to get brainwashed by your external influences or by yourself. So I'd rather just choose my own beliefs. What if you didn't need any money to create $1 billion? I've been having these conversations lately because I'm understanding how people sell companies, how people take companies public, all that kind of stuff. I've been meeting people that do that. And what's interesting is that a lot of times somebody who sells their company for $1 billion, it's sometimes they're not even profitable. I mean, look at Uber. I mean, how many tens of billions of dollars and they're still not profitable? Probably will never be. And you know, there's people that are there building apps and companies or whatever. And because somebody else believes they have value, they can sell that idea for billions of dollars. So I really think there's billions or millions of dollars in just ideas. It's just a matter of having the idea that other people will get behind. And, you know, you think of like Theranos, you know, it was actually probably a scam, the lady's going to prison or whatever, but her idea and her belief in herself and what she was doing created a multi-billion-dollar company with no proof, no profits, nothing. I'm not saying you should scam people. I'm just saying that wealth is sprouts from ideas as much as it can sprout from capital and from money. I'm always asking myself, what's the idea that could be the next big idea? And even like you just said, with the course, the Airbnb course, nobody had an Airbnb course before I did. Mm-hmm. So when I had that idea, I just thought to myself, this is worth millions immediately. And it was.
I think you've talked about how you developed the confidence that, hey, I could do this. Maybe talk about the mechanics of like, how did you actually, for somebody who didn't have previous experience creating a course or doing digital marketing, how did you package it? How did you get it to market? What did you run into? What worked? What didn't work? And how did you ultimately get it to blow up like it did?
Well, you know, I was making really good money right out the gate with Airbnb. I still do Airbnb as well, but like right out the gate, I started making all this income with these rental properties that I didn't own. I was putting them on Airbnb and I was kind of figuring out some kind of formula to how to do that. And because I couldn't find anybody else doing it online, I thought, well, I know this is something people will be interested in because they're already asking me about it. Friends are asking me about it. People see that I have this crazy lifestyle and I don't work hardly at all. And I have all this income coming in and I'm just living off this portfolio of properties because I couldn't go buy them. So I just use other people's properties. And I just thought, well, somebody would probably pay me for that information, but nobody else is doing it. So it's either going to be a really good idea or a really bad idea. Like this won't work at all it'll be very valuable because I'll be the first guy to do this.
Right.
And it ended up being the latter. But I really just started looking at what other people were doing. I looked at people that I could model. I said, well, obviously other people are selling courses online about other topics. what are they doing? And I just started looking at what they're doing and trying to model what they're doing. And I had a lot of, and I also just educated myself. I started buying courses. I bought courses on how to do courses. So I bought a course from our mutual friend, Mike Dillard, to learn how to do seven-figure sales presentations. Like how to, I got to buy a course on how to do a webinar. So I started investing in myself. So I spent tens of thousands of dollars investing in myself. And then, you know, when I release my product and release my webinar, it just works and everybody thinks it's magic. And I'm like, no, I spent a lot of time and energy to do that. And I didn't reinvent the wheel. So I think that anything you want to learn is learnable. If you really believe you can learn anything, I'm not particularly sharp on a computer. I don't code. I'm not good with software, but I learned it all and figured it out. And I think the key is whoever you're going to learn from, just make sure they've gotten the result that you want. So like, if you want to learn Airbnb, you should come to me and I'll show you how to do it. You can make a lot of money on Airbnb and not own property. But if you're going to come to me and want tax advice or accounting advice, I'm not the guy. And I'll just tell you, I'm not the guy.
Right.
You know, and there's things I don't teach. So you want to find somebody who's gotten the result that you want and then learn from that person, do everything that person tells you to do. Don't try to go in 10 different directions. And, you know, I think sometimes with this whole mastery mindset, there's nothing wrong with mastering something, but I think entrepreneurs fall into the trap of trying to, there is no such thing as mastering everything. You can't master everything. You can only choose to be a mastery in a few very narrow things. So I think trying to learn for the sake of learning is a big waste of time for most entrepreneurs. You should learn some things that you should get really good at. Like I got really good at teaching, really good at like being on video, for example. Mm-hmm. But everything else, I'm not really that great at. I hire people to do for me. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs get caught in the trap because they're like, well, I would sell my course, but I just can't figure out how to do email marketing. And I've been studying it for the last 2 years. And I'm like, hire an email marketing specialist, you know? Like, you know, so that it's kind of like, I just don't buy into that. You have to know every single skill set to be successful because you really don't.
I think that the knowledge economy and the internet itself has kind of created this fallacy that you're talking about, that like, all the information's out there. And so success is as simple as you gathering and learning all the information. Well, no.
But it's too much information.
You'll spend your whole life learning a smidgen of the information and getting nowhere.
Yeah, if I could just get a little bit more before I take action. You're focusing on the wrong things. And I see a lot of entrepreneurs doing that. So I'll give you an example. So when I built my course, and I did it, maybe I went a little bit overboard, but the proof is in the pudding. I took 6 months. I love to tell this story. I gave myself 6 months to build the world's best course on the topic of Airbnb. And of course there was no course on it. So I said, I'm going to do nothing but build a course for 6 months. Now, nowadays they all teach you, everybody teaches you, market a course before you create it.
Right.
Now I didn't do it that way. I took the chance and I put all my chips on the table and I said, I know this is going to work. I'm going to go for it. But what I did is I not only spent 6 months doing that, I was living off my Airbnb income. So I didn't have to go to a job. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about 40, 50 hours a week working on my course for 6 months, doing research and putting it all together and all that stuff. I took my TV, I put it in the attic.
Yes.
I said, I will not look at this TV again until I'm done with my course. I put the TV in the attic. I took all the books, and I have hundreds of books. I took all the books out of my room, put them in a box, except for three. I had Jeff Walker's product launch formula. I had dot com secrets came out. I had three books. That's all I had was three books on how to do online marketing. And I didn't own any other. So I just said, okay, those are the only books I'm going to study. I'm going to go buy some more. And I was like ruthless. I stopped dating. I was single at the time. I very rarely went out with friends. I was like, I'm going to do this. And then it was a little less than 6 months later, I had the course done. And then I realized I couldn't sell it. So I worked on another skill set, which was webinars. And I went deep on webinars and I obsessed over webinars. And that took about 3 months. So now I'm 9 months in, still not making any money in this business. But I launched my first webinar and it converted 33% of the people that were on the webinar bought. And I did $67,000 my first 90 minutes ever doing a live webinar. And then $1 million in the next 43 days.
Right.
So another $1 million in 43 days. And people think, oh my gosh, that's amazing. And I'm like, no, I learned some skill sets that I knew I had to learn and I shut everything else out. I stopped doing everything else. And I think that's where most people don't get so far off is they don't decide I'm going to master this thing and it's the next, and they don't know what the thing is to master. So then they just get all over the place. And you can't put like 3 or 4 days of concentrated effort and get something really amazing out. It just doesn't work that way generally. You got to put in time. And maybe not 6 months, maybe you don't have the luxury of doing that, but, and I was willing to pay the price. And I think people are not willing to pay the price, or they think that they're paying the price, but what they're doing is they're just staying busy. And, you know, it happens to me all the time. I've had friends come to me and say, you know, I have a really successful blah, blah, blah business here locally. And I'm thinking about maybe doing Airbnb as well. What do you think? Should I get your course? And I'm like, no. Not unless you want to be in this business. Don't get my course. I'm like, what do you mean? I said, you have a successful business. Like, focus on your business. Focus on that. Well, no, I think I want to do that too. I'm like, you could, but now you're going to be doing two businesses. So how well is that going to work out? And then I say, and you, last month you mentioned another business that you're thinking about doing. And so I don't know what business you're in. And a mentor of mine, once again, said the same thing. He's like, what business are you in, Brian? I was like, what does that mean? What business are you in? I was like, I don't know. I do a little of this, a little of that, a little. He's like, no. You got to be in a, you got to be stand for something. And I said, all right, I'm going to stand for flipping houses. I'll flip houses. And I ended up flipping like 100 properties and making millions. And so it's like, it's really focus is, and that's one of the books I have on my shelf right here is the book called Focus, is such an underrated asset that you can have. And if you can learn the discipline of focus, you can do just about anything. You really can. But it comes, you have to be brave. You have to be willing to say, I'm going to do this until it kills me or I break through, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just think a lot of entrepreneurs can't get to that point. And I'm preaching myself here because sometimes I will get unfocused and I'm like, wait a second, what business am I in? I got to get, and the perfect example is flipping houses. I was flipping houses some last year. And I couldn't do it. I was like, I'm not in that business anymore. I'm going to stop that. I'm going to focus on what I do. I have to write out, when I write out my annual goals, I write out my annual not to do list as well. So I say, okay, this is what I'm doing in 2020. This is what I'm not doing in 2020. So as starting in 2020, I will no longer be buying and renovating properties ever. I'm just not doing it. I've got a friend that's making tons of money in commercial real estate. I've always wanted to do commercial real estate, but guess what? If I take my eye off the prize right now, what I'm doing with Airbnb, what I'm doing with training on Airbnb and everything related to Airbnb, I'm going to miss the ball because I know where I'm going with it. And if I go do commercial real estate, I could also make millions, but I could also risk what I'm doing. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't marry their thing. They'd have to decide. It's like if you want to have a successful marriage and then every month you're looking at some other person you could marry, like, oh, I could marry five women. You know, you maybe could, but it's going to be very hard to have a successful marriage if you're constantly looking for more, you know, more options instead of saying, no, there's going to be times where marriage is hard. There's going to be times where it's very challenging and I want to quit, but I've committed to them. And I'm not saying you have to do one business for your whole life, but you do have to do one business to get the result that you're after. So if you believe millions, it's making millions of dollars is easy and you haven't yet made millions of dollars, then maybe it's not time to quit. Maybe it's time to double down, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's what it is. I got to double down on what my thing is and I don't stop just when it gets tough or when I get distracted or shiny object syndrome or, oh, there's this new thing that other people are doing or look what Jeff's doing. I'm going to go do what Jeff's doing because it's very tempting. It's very tempting.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential, and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.